There is a podcast that lies between the imagination of two simple-minded earthlings. Travel with these two longtime friends, Jimbo and 80s E, as they attempt to explore the fifth dimension. Follow along with them as they take the key and unlock the door to the vast space between shadow and substance. This podcast is one of trivia, of insight, and of sounds and ideas from one of the greatest television shows ever produced. You are embarking on a timeless journey. There is your signpost up ahead. You are entering the tragedy of cinema's Twilight Zone.
The carcass of a goat, a dead finger, a few bits of broken glass and stone, and Mr. Alan Richards, a modern man of a modern age, hating with all his heart something in which he cannot believe, and preparing, although he doesn't know it, to take the longest walk of his life, right down to the center of the Twilight Zone.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Tragedy of Cinema podcast, the Twilight Zone series. I'm your host, Jimbo.
And coming from a northwest side concrete jungle, I'm your other host, 80Z.
Concrete jungle. Well, Eric, here we are, trudging along, season 3 of the Twilight Zone. We've come to episode 12, The Jungle, and as I said, and I'll say it again, season 3 just isn't up to par with the first two seasons, I don't think.
Art Toast might disagree with you after our meeting the other day. He didn't care for our assessments of these episodes so far.
He's harsher than I am.
Yeah, The Jungle is the next one on the docket. I'll go ahead and take a swing for the fences here. The Twilight Zone, this is season number 3, episode number 12, entitled The Jungle. And it was, let me look at my notes here, directed by William F. Claxton. And the teleplay, of course, was by Charles Beaumont. The original air date for this episode was December the 1st, 1961, which you guys know what time it is. That's right, it's time for
On This Day in History.
All right, and for On This Day in History, December the 1st, 1961, let's go back all the way to 1903, Jimbo. 1903, the Great Train Robbery. Is the first Western film released starring Justice D. Barnes, a relative of yours, perhaps?
Boy, I sure hope so. I need to find some of that memorabilia and money, huh?
Yeah. It was released, the first Western film released December 1st, 1903. Oh, I'm sorry, I left off Justice D. Barnes and G.M. Anderson. Not familiar with that work, but first Western film. Let's skip ahead to 1924 and Lady Be Good. George Gershwin and Ira Gershwin, it was the first collaborative musical called Lady Be Good. It featured both siblings. Actually, there was two sets of siblings, I'm assuming here. George Gershwin and Ira Gershwin were the composers, and it featured siblings Fred Astaire and Adele Astaire as brother and sister dance team opens at the Liberty Theater in New York City and runs 330 performances.
Hey, you know who Lady Be Good was married to, right?
No.
Johnny Be Bad. Wow. I was waiting for the ringtone of the do do do.
Yeah, wow. Well, you got it. You got it for that poorly.
Harry just looked at me like I was stupid.
That so poorly executed joke.
Well, you were taking a sip of coffee at the time, so yeah. It would have got a better reaction.
All right, 1957 on December 1st, Buddy Holly and the Crickets, the Seminole rock band. They made their debut on the Ed Sullivan Show, performing That'll Be the Day and Peggy Sue. Singer Sam Cooke also performs after getting bumped due to time constraints on the November 3rd show. He sings You Send Me and I Love You for Sentimental Reasons. Are you familiar with those two groups?
No, well, not well, I mean those groups, yes, but didn't Sam Cooke do the song Don't Know Much About History?
Yes, he did.
Thank you. That's the one I know. That's the one I like.
Love me some Sam Cooke. It's good. Real good stuff. All right. 1958, moving right along. Liberty Records single is released on December 1st, 1958, and I know you'll be familiar with this one. The Chipmunks song, Christmas Don't Be Late by David Seville and the Chipmunks. It becomes a number one hit, and it actually won 3 Grammy Awards for comedy performance, children's recording, and best engineered, the good old Chipmunk song.
What is wrong with Alvin where all he wants is a hula hoop?
Right. Yeah, he's got to ask for more than that. I remember having that vinyl album and playing it over and over and over as a kid around Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 1982, December 1st, the movie Tootsie, directed by Sidney Pollack, and it was starring Dustin Hoffman and Jessica Lange. It premiered in Hollywood. 1984, Beverly Hills Cop, directed by Martin Best and starring Eddie Murphy, and Judge Reinhold premieres in Los Angeles, December 1st, 1984. 1985, the miniseries Anne of Green Gables, based on the novel by Lucy Maud Montgomery, starring Megan Fellows, is first shown on CBS in Canada. And I got 2 more here. 1988, on December 1st, NBC bids for a record $401 million to capture the television broadcasting rights for the 1992 Barcelona Summer Olympics. That was a good year, 1992. I was really into the Olympics.
Wasn't that the dream team year?
It absolutely was. I remember working at McDonald's at the time. I was in high school. And
had baseball cards, remember?
Oh, the baseball cards. We had all the McDonald's cups with all the dream teamers on it. And we had all that memorabilia. I wish I would have saved some of that. That would have been cool memorabilia to have around. But that was a good Olympics, 1992. And then finally, in 2018, on December 1st, computer animated film Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, starring Shameik Moore and Hailee Steinfeld, premieres in Los Angeles. And it was, it actually won an Academy Award here, it says, for Best Animated Film of 2019.
Good movie.
Yeah, so December 1st, we close the books on you, and then let's move on to a plot of our episode here. Actually, I need to read some more information regarding the actual episode. We already talked about the air date. Let's talk about production cost for this episode. Was $60,766.11. The dates of rehearsal are just one, June 16th, 1961. And then the dates of filming are June 19, 20, and 21. Actually, 4. 19, 20, 21, and 22 of 1961. And let me give you a quick plot, and I'll let Jimbo rattle off that cast for us. So the plot of this episode is Alan Richards and his wife are back in New York after living in Africa, where he is in charge of a major construction project. His wife was deeply affected after an interaction with a local witch doctor, and the witch doctor actually placed a curse on them and has taken to keeping charms to ward off evil spirits. While Richard doesn't discount the power of the witch doctor entirely, he dismisses her fears as unfounded. Having a drink in a bar one evening, he finds that his wife left a protective amulet in his coat pocket. He leaves it on the bar, and when he leaves, or after he leaves, and as a result, his dangerous and frightening walk home only to find something there waiting for him. Dun-dun-dun, we'll leave that big twist for the end. There's something waiting for him when he gets home from his walk. Jimbo, let us know who's in this wonderful episode.
I sure will, Eric. But first, I think it's only right that we read this review by our good buddy JasonB007. Now, I think this is the first time in the history of the podcast, all these 5 years, that a review has been written about an episode that we haven't done yet. So I think Bond jumped the gun. Bond is on top of things, let me tell you.
He's a good
Bond
listener.
By the way, your shirt came in. I will be getting that out to you soon. But by the time you hear this, you probably already have it. So here's what he wrote. He wrote The Jungle, 5 stars. Another terrible episode in season 3. Finding a top 10 may be harder than I think. Great podcast, guys. And he says his prop piece is the dead goat. Just kidding. He'd take the lion's tooth. But Eric, he also added a little thing to on your day in history. He said, on this day in history, Rosa Parks begins what is to become the famous bus boycott when she refuses to give up her seat. Bond out. So, Bond, thanks again for listening. I'm going to send you another email so we can set up that time when you want to do an episode with us. So be on the lookout for that as well. So now let's dive into the cast. It is a little bit bigger of a cast, but it's not bigger as in main characters of the episode. There's only a couple. So mainly only one if you want to get technical. So here we go. The main actor is John Diener. He plays Alan Richards. He was in the movie The Boys from Brazil in 1978. Eric, he was in Airplane 2, the sequel. Oh. And yes, The Right Stuff in 1983. No, not The New Kids on the Block, but the movie The Right Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's about the right time period. It may have been. He may have been in the New Kids on the Block video. I don't know. 83. We're getting close. Walter Brook. He played Chad Cooper. He was in The Graduate in 1967, as well as Tora, Tora, Tora. Great movie if you've never seen that. Jay Adler. He played Tramp. He was in The Killing in 1956. Emily McLaughlin. She played Doris Richards, who was the husband or the wife of Alan. Get this, Eric. She was in General Hospital, the soap opera, from 1963 to 2018.
Oh yeah, that thing's running
where
forever.
She played Jessie Brewer. She was a RN on the that she's been in a ton of that stuff. So, what a career! Hugh Sanders played Templeton. Again, we have the name Templeton. We've seen that several times in the Twilight Zone. He was in That's My Boy. That is where he played Coach Wheeler. Do you know what that is, Eric?
I know the Adam Sandler movie, That's My Boy, but...
No, that is...
It's obviously not that one.
Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin movie where he played Coach Wheeler. And he was in one of the episodes of The Outer Limits. You had Howard Wright. He played Hardy. He was in the Twilight Zone. Didn't really find much on him. Donald Foster playing Sinclair. And this movie, this might be one of the greatest names of a movie I've ever seen. And it's from 1966. It is Lord Love a Duck. So I don't know what that is, but I think I might have to look into it. Lord Love a Duck. Then, of course, this guy's no stranger to the the Twilight Zone. I think this is the glorified extra that's been in the most episodes of The Twilight Zone. His name's Jay Overholtz. He plays the taxi driver in this one. He's also starred in Playhouse 90 and Gunsmoke, so you see his name several times in several of The Twilight Zone episodes. And then, of course, we have the great Rod Serling. No introduction needed. He's obviously the creator of The Twilight Zone as well as the Night Gallery. So there you have it, Eric. You're short, but... List of cast.
All right. So let's launch on into the episode here.
Okay. The very first thing I'm going to say about this episode is, can you find a more terrible landscape than the one they used for the beginning of this episode?
Let me back up. I'm going to get
there
with you.
The matte painting.
When you get to the high-rise building here in the beginning?
Yeah.
Or
okay. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
It's not good. And I've got some... Well, I was reading some reviews, and there's some criticisms about the backstory of this episode, but we'll get to that at the end. But I think they're a little too critical. But we open in a high-rise building here, and it looks as though the main character, Alan and Doris Richards, they live a pretty good lifestyle. You know, he's got a tuxedo on, and Doris is making him a drink from their bar. They got a nice roaring fire in the background. I'm assuming this is like a nice New York high-rise apartment. And
very, very wealthy is what I get from this picture.
Yeah. So the first thing Alan does is he found some souvenirs from the witch doctor. And
Okay, Eric, I have a question right away. He said, I'm missing one of my cufflinks.
When he has them on.
Well, it could be a different one or maybe a double one.
Or he found it.
But my question is he finds it in her jewelry bag, right?
Right.
And it's in there with all that witch doctor stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you think that she had taken that and put it in there with that witch doctor stuff as a symbol of protection for him, because sometimes you have to have something that the owner owns to put towards a spell to protect the owner.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe assumption, considering that she put the lion's tooth in his jacket pocket later right. on. So yeah, I think he even comments to that fact later in the episode, but he doesn't care too much for these souvenirs, if you will. He takes them over to the fireplace and tosses them in.
She's like, no!
Yeah, Doris begs him not to do it, and then he tells Doris, I got a quote here, he says, "We're not in Africa any longer. We're here in New York. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is for weak people, ignorant, uncivilized people who don't know any better. Not for you or me, Doris. We've done nothing wrong. We've done nothing. We've got nothing to fear. Least of all, from a bunch of witch doctors 5,000 miles away." So Alan heads out to a meeting, and he says he'll try to be back early, but Doris says he'll never be back. She makes a bold prediction.
Two observations. One, he asks her blatantly, is there any more souvenirs? And she's like, no. Well, we know that's a lie right there because, of course, the lion's tooth is in his pocket. But when, as you said, he said, you'll never be back. Well, that turns out to be a lie too, because he does come back.
Yeah, she makes that prediction, but I think she has that, what do you call it? Womanly intuition. She's got a bad feeling, right? And, so we see that play out.
How come men never get a bad feeling? We just don't care. We're doing it anyway, right?
plunge headlong into, yeah, whatever. So here's a big scary reveal here. So as he's about to head out to the meeting, again, Doris has that strange intuition, and Alan opens the door. We see a carcass of a dead goat laying in the hallway. So, Bond, there's your prop piece waiting for you. And then we go right into Rod's narration. It's a quick camera pan to the wall, like a blank wall behind him. And he gives us our opening narration. We go to commercial. We come back for Act 2. We've got the jungle title shot, you know, the camera rising up a high-rise building. And then I thought this was actually pretty cool. The backdrop might not be good, but then they zoom into that actual board meeting room, the camera does, from the outside. And then we go inside. We cut to the hydraulic electric survey page that, it's like the project for the company that he's working for. And there's a bunch of men sitting around a boardroom table. And the boss asks about the natives. And Mr. Richards describes them as Uchawi. Or he describes the Uchawi, which means witchcraft. And then Alan Richards goes on to describe the curse of a slow, painful death. This curse that they put on him specifically, probably those in his company as well.
Yeah, they said the curse on anyone that is working on this project.
Okay. So there's some discussion, but then Richards, I don't know, in this episode I kind of see him as kind of on the fence, because he tells his wife, like, no, this is stupid, we're civilized people, you know, that quote that I read earlier. But then in the boardroom, he basically goes around the table and points out all the hypocrisy, exposing each person's superstitions, right?
Well, he doesn't do that at first, but they start making fun of him. They're all just dismissing it, like, ha, ha, ha.
Right, right.
You believe in that stuff. He's like, what's not to believe? He's like, look, he said, hey, can you tell me the time? Who's he say that to? Sinclair. He says, Sinclair, can you tell me time? And he pulls out his pocket watch, and there's a lucky rabbit's foot on there.
Yeah.
And so he berates him a little bit, and then he asks Mr. Hardy, he's like, hey, and you, Mr. Hardy, why are you laughing? He's like, somebody that's given their time to astrology, you know, that sees signs from the stars, surely you can't think this is any different than that. And then, of course, he's like, Mr. Templeton, and he's like, how many times have you knocked on wood? And he asks somebody else, when's the last time you walked under a ladder? So he's bringing out all these superstitions that they hold on to, but they don't consider them in the same realm as the witchcraft that curses that he's talking about.
Right, and he's just exposing their hypocrisy, really. They view these people, these are highfalutin people, and they view these people in this village, these witch doctors, as, you know, less than, and, you know, that's crazy, and they're non-sophisticated and so on and so forth. Yeah, just like you said, rabbit's foot, astrology, knocking on wood, and all that. And then Well, I don't have much more for this scene, but...
Hey, yeah, and Chad's the other guy in here. Chad's the other guy at the thing, so...
Yeah, and we're going to see Chad in the next scene, right? When they go to the bar after this meeting. And like I said, I don't have anything left for the boardroom scene, but we do go to the bar is the next scene, and he's sitting around the bar with Chad Cooper, and then as they're talking about the meeting, and then he asks him about, Alan asks Chad about a dead goat. Where could you get a dead goat or something like that? And then a lion's tooth, after he knocks over his drink, Alan knocks over his drink, and then a lion's tooth falls out of his pocket. And the men, it's late, so the men decide that they're going to leave, and they get in their cars on the street. That's the next scene. Richard's car won't start, so he tries to get Chad's attention, but to no avail. Richards returns to the bar and knocks on the door, where he looks in through the window, and the camera zooms in on the bar, and we see the lion's tooth, and then we go to commercial. Anything in that scene that sticks out?
Well, I just want to go back to the boardroom scene real quick. Mm-hmm. Like one of his closing things, like, look, you guys are in here in one of the tallest buildings. He's like, that doesn't even have a 13th floor. So it's very well known that 13th is an unlucky number. So a lot of these, especially buildings today, if you get in an elevator and it's higher than, let's say, 13 floors or 14 floors, there is no button 13 on the elevator. Yeah. So I wanted to point that out real quick. Also, in this bar scene, if you take a look at Alan there, he's mm-hmm. married, but on his left hand, there is a ring on his pinky, not on his ring finger.
Mm-hmm.
So that was struck me as odd, too. Why is this ring on his pinky and not on his wedding finger? Unless they weren't married, but she has the same last name, so I'm assuming it's his wife, right?
I'm going to say that when he got married, let's say 25 years ago, that ring fit on his ring finger, and now it's
so
too small.
He got fat.
Like all of us, can't put on a few pounds, and the ring has to be moved to the pinky. I don't know. Some people, you know, there are, I don't know how popular it was back then, but a lot of people who are married, sometimes they don't wear wedding rings.
I thought maybe that's like, it's because he's in the high society, and when he drinks his tea, his pinky sticks out of his finger, and everybody sees that he's married. I don't know.
Possibly. All right, so we come back for Act 3. And Richards, well, I'm at the point where they're on the street and the car won't start, and he's, let me skip ahead. So Act 3, he walks to a phone booth. That's speaking of Alan Richards. He walks to a phone booth that's out of order, and as he leaves it, it begins ringing. He returns to pick it up, and he hears animal noises. And he walks down the sidewalk, and I'm going to go quickly here. He walks down the sidewalk, and he hears more animal noises in the trees. A cab approaches, and Richard gets in. And at the stoplight, the driver dies. He just is slumped over in his seat, right? And we hear more animal noise. More noises as Richards walks down the street, and he encounters a storefront window and is startled by a native costume. He sees like the Uchawi native type costume in the store front window, and he's, you know, pretty scared.
Yeah, because the guy's got the spear pointed at him, too.
And then he feels a hand on his shoulder simultaneously, and it's just a bum on the street who's asking for money because he hasn't eaten in 2 days, but it startles him.
That is a great scene.
Yeah, that's a pretty good scene. The exchange, for sure. Then Richards, he wanders into the park. And all of this, the noise and the sound and the intensity is building throughout all of these interactions with the bum and as he's walking on the street. And then he wanders into the park. And then this is kind of the scene that's probably the highlight of the episode, where he's running what I'm going to assume is a mock-up of Central Park. And then he's running away from the noises, and then he runs into that fence, and then we got that tight shot on his face and the sheer terror in his eyes as he's trying to run away, but it seems like he's trapped, you know, in the park.
Right, but I think what we missed, too, is that when when he asked the homeless guy, he's like, look, I'll give you $10 if you help walk me home.
Right.
And the guy's like, yeah, okay. And, you know, he's talking to him, and then he hears some more noises. I think it's drums. He says, do you hear those drums? And the guy's like, what are you talking about? I don't hear anything. He's like, the drums. And he turns around, and the homeless guy is gone. He disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, wait, where'd you go? I'll give you $20. You know, and he's chasing him through, like, these alleys and everything. Now, one of my observations, if this is supposed to be, like, New York City or a big city, mm-hmm. I'm saying it's New York. I don't know. Where's everybody at? Where's all the cars? There's nobody around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Unless he, yeah, he's just in, like, a high society section of New York. I don't know. I guess I'm going to assume that it's like 3 a.m. and it, but, right, but still at 3 a.m, there's still people. Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Right. That's a good there's point. Bars open, you know.
Yeah.
There should be, like, you know, homeless people walking around. There should be a lot of this other stuff, traffic somewhere, subways, trains, taxis, all this stuff.
Right.
But you only see the one taxi. Unless he's in the Twilight Zone, which we know he is. So
yep.
maybe the homeless guy really wasn't there to begin with. Maybe the taxi driver really wasn't there to begin with. It's all brought on by the hallucinations brought on by the witch doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a point where he makes it to the front door of his penthouse, and all of a sudden he starts hearing the noises of the cars and trains and all that again, if you pay attention. Like,
yeah.
the scary stuff's gone. So maybe it's something that they put, like, a block on where he couldn't see or hear any of that stuff.
Yeah, that was part of my observations I was going to offer up to you. But, well, I'm right here now where he's at the fence, and he's in the park. He looked in the trees. He lit a cigarette, and he runs to that fence, and he's trapped. But then he runs back through the entry, right, and then right to where you were talking about earlier, Jimbo. He trips over a trash can. He runs to the front of his apartment building, and he smashes, like, up against the glass, right? And then the noises stop, the animal noises, as he slides down the window, and, like, all the other regular noises would reappear. And just when he thinks he can't take it anymore, they stop, and he thinks everything's good.
Well, don't forget, when he's running through the park, too, he turns around, as he's hearing the lion noises, and he runs face-to-face into that cement lion,
yeah,
the statue of the lion, and mm-hmm. it really scares him, you know. And then I think by that time, he's really paranoid, like, hey, this stuff may be true. I'm really going to die tonight.
Yeah. So then after the front of the building scene, where he slides down the glass, and it's important to note, too, like, he started out, he had a nice tuxedo on, and it's really evident in this shot that I'm looking at. Like, he was all cleaned up, clean cut, looking good. Now he's all disheveled. His clothes are filthy, dirty, and he's just a mess. So then the next scene cuts to the inside of the apartment. He decides he's going to go in and make a drink for himself. His hands are shaking. He brings the glass up to his mouth to take a drink, and hears a growling in the bedroom. Right.
Hey, it's a good time in the town tonight, baby. His wife's in the bedroom growling.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't end the way that he thought. He approaches slowly and opens the door to find a lion. That's the great reveal. A lion on the bed and how do I put this? The corpse of his wife. Not really believable. It looks pretty shabbily made corpse of his wife, but he finds the lion on the bed with his dead wife, and then the lion attacks him, jumps, and they roll out of frame, and that's the end of the episode. Anything?
You know,
closing?
I had the lion's name in the cast, and I don't know where it went. It must have got cut off, but I did have it.
Yeah.
So the lion, I'll see if I can't find it.
The lion makes an appearance.
I was wanting to see if maybe it was the MGM
Zamba.
Lion.
Zamba.
Zamba, okay.
Zamba is the lion.
I couldn't remember. Has he been in any other things we've seen? Did you happen to know?
Couldn't tell you that one, Jimbo.
I did have one question for you, Eric. When he comes out of the bar and he gets into his car, he gets in on the passenger side and slides across. Eric, did you ever have a car that you could get in and slide across a passenger seat, or maybe growing up one of your family members had one that you could get in and slide all the way across to the driver's side?
Oh, sure. The old bench seat. Yeah, my dad had a truck, I think, that had a big bench seat, and he might have even had an older car when I was really young that, you know, had the big bench seat that you could slide all the way across. Actually, I have memories of when I was really little, the seat belt and car seat laws were not like they are today, and I could just I could just ride in the middle. My parents on either side, I just rode right in the middle in the front seat. Yeah.
My first car was an 86 Chevy S10 or whatever, and it had that in there. But I don't ever remember just hopping in the passenger seat to slide over to the driver's seat. I always went to the driver's side. Unless, of course, that door was frozen shut or something, and you had to climb over. Even today, if a car's outside, you have to climb over the seat. That's the only thing I could think of.
You see that in a lot of older movies. I think it was due to like traffic. Like if you had oncoming traffic, you would always get in from the sidewalk and then slide over. I think maybe.
But there's nobody in this movie.
I'm gonna say for this, I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say that it was where the camera was placed and they needed the camera shot. So that's why they had to show him getting in. That's my best guess.
I'll accept your answer. I'll accept it. Congratulations.
All right. Let's move along to the trivia here. Uchawi is Swahili for witchcraft or sorcery. The veteran cinematic and television exotic animal trainer, boy, that's a mouthful, Mel Kuntz. He replaces John Diener in the final line attack scene in the closing scene. So that was not Diener. That was the trainer, Mel Kuntz. The original story by Charles Beaumont was first published in the 1954 issue of Pulp Magazine. It was entitled Worlds of Science Fiction. So this original story was by Charles Beaumont. And I guess there was some jockeying, really, to get this episode made. I think Rod was on board totally with Beaumont's story to make it a teleplay, but the other entities in charge weren't really on board with them. But the set was used, or the board meeting set was used in A Stop at Willoughby, 1960. Donald Foster's character in the jungle is Mr. Sinclair. Upton Sinclair was the author of the 1906 novel, The Jungle, about a poorly maintained industrial district in Chicago where employees are daily at risk of falling into death traps. So that might be an interesting read, the novel entitled The Jungle. Mr. Richards' car. Here we are on the cars for all you car buffs. Mr. Richards' car is a 1961 Lincoln Continental convertible sedan. Now, I don't know. I may have to do some digging, but I think that was the JFK car in the infamous assassination, but I don't know that for sure. So Lincoln Continental for Mr. Richards. Chad leaves in a 1961 Ford Galaxy, and the taxi is a 1960 Plymouth sedan. Production sheet prop numbers show the small white horse used in the decoration on the table in the living room was the same featured in The Silence and A Most Unusual Camera. So there's a prop piece that you can probably pick out if you look closely in other episodes. The Twilight Zone was not telecast on the evening of December 8, 1961. In this time slot, CBS offered the second in a series of original full-hour dramas for Westinghouse Presents. It was entitled Come Again to Carthage. Piper Laurie, Ann Harding, Arthur Hill, and Joan Hackett joins as special guest star Maurice Evans. So some of you older folks might remember that in our audience. I have no reference to that. I recall this is, I think this is Diener. Here speaking, says, I recall Bill, the director, telling me that I had the sort of character that had to believe that voodoo stuff, recalled Diener. I was instructed not to smile during the film, take everything serious. I guess it was my saturnine face that clinched it for me. The real challenge was to stay within my marks. This is interesting right here. They had me run through the park, and it was late at night. The sun had set, so they placed these markers in the earth so I would run within the view of the camera. My job was to keep looking behind me because something was chasing me through the park. I had difficulty looking behind me and down in front of me to see the markers without Bill shouting for me to stop and do another take. The camera was moving alongside me as I ran, but I kept getting out of range. I couldn't look at the markers and look behind me at the same time. As I recall, we spent quite a while getting the run through, and I got home way after midnight. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit. Yeah, that would be very difficult, you know, for doing it late at night and seeing the markers and trying to look behind him. So that was kind of interesting to me. One final note, the jukebox in the bar is the same from Mr. Dingle the Strong. So there's another prop piece there. Anything, Jimbo, as far as trivia that you want
to
throw in?
Well, also, you got to remember the stairs in the city street where Alan runs up is the stairs and looks at the bar's glass doors is the same stairs from One for the Angels back episode 2, I believe, where Lewis Bookman made his sales pitch to Mr. Death. That was before Eric joined on as a host of the or the co-host. Also, Serling was a very, I guess, I'll say religious man loosely. So some of the witchcraft stuff he didn't and supernatural stuff he didn't believe in. But according to Reverend Ernest Pipes of the Unitarian Universalist Community Church, theologically speaking, Rod was what we call a naturalistic humanist, and that was the underlying philosophy of my pulpit. So thought that was a very interesting comment for him to make, too.
Yep, I got a couple goofs, three goofs here in this episode. The primary haunting sound Alan hears as he's walking down the street is the dark sound of the kookaburra. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's actually a laughing bird that is native to Australia and found nowhere in Africa, on the continent of Africa, from which he has recently returned. When Alan enters his car, the driver's window is up, but a moment later it is down. I didn't notice that. I'd have to go back and watch it again to really notice that. And then finally, on the goof side, during the close-up of the charms at the beginning of the show, Mr. Richards is wearing black studs in his shirt. During the rest of the scene, his shirt is fastened with standard buttons. So I didn't catch that either. I'd have to really, really closely pay attention to the last two goofs. So Jimbo, wrap it up, baby. Thoughts, feelings in this episode? Where do you rank it? And what's your prop piece?
Well, we'll start off with my prop piece. Obviously, it's got to be the severed finger for sure. You can just stick that in any crevice of your house, any bookshelf, anywhere you want. So I'm taking the finger. You know, I watched this like three times. I don't think it's as bad as it gets rated for. I think what they tried to do and what came out, I think it was okay. I really enjoyed the where he goes and looks in the mirror, or in the mirror, in the storefront, and the tribal guys there with the thing. And that's really a person, too. You can see him moving a little bit. I thought that was really well done. Mm-hmm. And then the homeless guy's hand comes on his shoulder. Excellent. I think Alan here, I think he shows true fear by the end of it. And you can see the degeneration of his character throughout, from this upscale, impressive businessman. And then as the episode goes along, he starts having doubts and feelings, and it starts going down and down and down. It's better than some in season 3 we've watched for sure. So for that and that alone, I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10. I think it's above average. I really enjoyed the story that it told. It took me on a journey. It actually gave me a story, not just some of the trash that we've seen in the last few episodes.
Okay. We'll table that for a second. I have a question for you, though. Do you think the lion that killed Mrs. Richards, do you think that happened at the precise moment that the animal noises stopped for Alan Richards when he slid down the apartment window? I was thinking about that, and I was trying to put those together. I wonder, because she was like his go between, I guess, between the, you know, the spell or the curse that was put on him, and once the lion killed her. But it doesn't seem quite fair that she gets killed. It's implied that he gets killed too by the lion, but
right. I don't know. Could she have been lying at the beginning when he asked if there was any more souvenirs? As we know, it was a trinket, but she kept all that stuff in one little thing. So if you go back and watch the beginning, when she says something like that, then she looks genuinely scared and worried, and she's like, "You're not coming back home tonight." And I think she knew at that point that she was going to be a goner too, because there's nothing else with the protection on her. But my thing is it really fair to her to begin with, if she was over in Africa, just because she's married to the guy that was in charge of drilling the into the land, where they said the land's going to scream and put a curse on you and you pay for this. Is it fair to her? Because it doesn't say she worked for the company. She was just married to the guy that worked for the company. So I don't know if she really got a just death because of that. Who knows? I mean, it's a good observation. I mean, you can see either one, right?
Guilt by association, maybe. And it is the Twilight Zone, so yeah, Twilight Zone justice. It comes down on maybe whoever's associated with him. All right, here's one. I take exception to a couple of, I said I would get to this. People writing in comments, they said they were complaining about the lack of scenes from Africa in the early in the episode. And they try to make this argument that somehow it would have made the episode better. I don't necessarily know about that. And obviously they're not taking into consideration the budgetary restrictions. It would be a tall order, really, to take real actual footage, or even if they added extra stock footage of Africa to the episode. I don't know that it really enhanced it all that much. I've seen people like, you know, knocking it down. There's so many other things that you could knock this episode for, other than that they just told the story that they had returned from Africa in the dialogue. I mean, that seems kind of wimpy to me. I obviously, this episode didn't do anything for me. I would give it a 6.5, maybe at best. Probably low. I mean, I think IMDb gave it a 6.8. I might even knock it down to a 6. It just, it was average. It really didn't impress me. I think it is better than the episode that we're going to look at next week. But I'll say,
oh, that. You are so wrong for saying that.
No,
I'll stand up and defy you right here on that.
No,
you but can't.
But we'll get to that one. But we'll get to that one later. Hang on, let me finish my prop piece. Can I get my prop?
Okay. No, you don't get a prop. No,
I'm gonna probably go with the rabbit, just the basic rabbit's foot, I guess, because I was gonna go with the lion's tooth, but I don't want to steal Bond's prop piece.
Really, you could have went with the vulture's claw or something cool, or the baubles of the witch.
The rabbit's foot. All right, what do you got?
Here's my question to you. Do you think Alan was a bad guy for wanting to set up the irrigation system to give water to Africa and some of the dry regions?
No, I think overall, and he even talks about that in the boardroom scene, like they didn't understand, for maybe because they were a primitive society, they didn't understand the massive benefits that were supposed to come. So let's be real. A lot of times corporations, they might start out with good intentions, but at the end of the day, it's about the almighty dollar. And I think that was the insinuation of the episode.
Right. And we can take that all the way up to, what was it, the Keystone Pipeline and all that, in today's society that we're going through, where they stopped,
sure,
all that stuff. So when they go through, like, the native lands and all that, you know what I mean? So, well, Eric, I think we've done this episode as about as much justice as we can. If you'd like to follow us, we are the Tragedy of Cinema Podcast on Facebook. If you want to reach out to us, we are thetragedyofcinema@gmail.com. If you want to leave us a review, we will read it on the air like we do for Mr. Bond. Again, we thank everybody for listening. With that being said, I think this episode's coming to a close, and that's a wrap.
And cut.
Some superstitions kept alive by the long night of ignorance have their own special power. You'll hear of it through a jungle grapevine in a remote corner of the Twilight Zone.
Thank you.